This programming is sponsored by Linscombe Wealth, a wealth management firm partnering with individuals and families dedicated to helping them build, preserve, and manage wealth by creating a customized plan to work toward achieving their goals. More at linscombewealth.com.
Welcome to Party Politics. I'm Brandon Rodinghouse, a political science professor from the University of Houston.
And I'm Jay Iyer, a political science professor from Texas Southern University. Thanks for joining us at our favorite hangout. Brandon, we've got a great show. We've got a special show today because we do something we don't do very often. We have a special guest, our member of Congress, Lizzie Pannell Fletcher from
Welcome.
Texas District 7.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Well, I want to get this out of the way. I sort of teased this with you earlier. You know, nationally, there's been a lot of conversation about AOC, but for us in this show, we are all about LPF.
Awesome.
All about LPF.
Work? Well, presidents, you know, have that designation. So if you ever ran for president, then it'd be a natural transition, right? So that would work.
Right. Well, now we're going to see a video of you dancing at some point, potentially.
Right. I'm not aware of one.
Okay.
Oh, not aware of one. All right. See, maybe there you go. Maybe there's something out there,
Who
folks.
Knows? Well, so you're the first woman to represent CD7. You're also the first Democrat to represent CD7. This is kind of a big change for Houston. One question is sort of, how do you see kind of Houston changing politically? And you've been in Houston your whole life, and so you've seen lots of these changes. What are some of the ones that are high points for you? And what's your sort of estimation on kind of what it's going to take to turn kind of all of Harris County and maybe even all of Texas blue?
Well, you know, it's a great question, and a lot of people have asked me, you know, has the district changed so much? And certainly there are demographic changes in the district, and the district boundaries have changed mm-hmm. over time. But I also think that I am just a sort of true blue Houstonian, and I think the district in many ways, the politics have moved mm-hmm. in some ways more than the district has. And I think I occupy a space in the Congress that I think is the right place for our district, which is kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we are hopeful that our government at every level will be efficient, will be effective, and will be ethical. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a consistent value that this district has held for a long time. And I think people are finding that people like me, who are Democrats, are the ones that are most advocating that vision of our future.
Mm-hmm. So you're obviously in D.C. a lot, but you come home a lot. How does that work for you? Can you maybe walk us through an average week for you going back and forth and week in Congress?
Sure. I mean, you know, one of the things that's great about this is that we actually get a calendar at the beginning of the year, and we didn't quite stick to it at the beginning, of course, because of the government shutdown. So our schedule changed a little bit. But generally, I'm in Washington 3 weeks out of a month, and then I'm home for a week a month in the district. But I fly back and forth every week. So I'll either fly up on Monday and back on Thursday or fly up Tuesday and come back on Friday night. And so it gives me a good opportunity to be home, be present, experience things that people here are experiencing, and have a bunch of meetings and talk to people and see what's going on. And I think it's really important for our members of Congress to be back and forth and be in touch with what's happening at home.
Mm. It must be tough to kind of balance like your actual life, right? Because you are a human person, not just a member of Congress, right? So you've got family, you've got obligations. And so how do you balance those things in a week-to-week basis? Do you keep in touch by text? Do you phone call? Do you set up dinner dates? Like, how do you kind of work it with your family what is a very high profile and very busy job?
Yeah. So the first thing I do that I think is very important in terms of balance is I keep my Sonos radio in DC tuned to KUHF.
Perfect.
88.7 to make sure that I know what's going on at home. Mm-hmm. And then we have a couple of ways of doing things, but I'm in a really fortunate position kind of family wise that I have two great stepkids who are now actually in their own apartments and paying their own rent.
Nice.
And so we're kind of empty nesters. My husband and I are managing by traveling a little bit back and forth. I'm home 1 week a month. He tries to come up to D.C. 1 week a month, give or take. Sometimes it doesn't work out perfectly, but and then I'm home and getting to see my family on the weekends. But, you know, one of the great things about this job is that I get to be a part of the community. And so I'm out doing the kinds of things I already was doing and love doing. Just this weekend, I went to the JCC Gala to celebrate and developed the scholarship fund. I went to the rodeo, and I did all of these things as a member of Congress for various reasons and got to talk to different groups there, but you know, very much just participating in the life of this community. So,
do you feel more people recognize you now that you're officially in Congress? Is that something that, you know, you'll see at the rodeo, say, somebody will point you out and say, that's Lizzie Fletcher. She's a member of Congress.
Well, I definitely get a lot of people who look at me and they're like, I know you, but I'm right. not sure how. Right. And I think part of that is, you know, we were on TV
yeah.
a lot.
Right.
I was on TV a lot in the fall. So there are people who are like, you look so familiar. So I get a lot of that. And then I get a few people who come up to me and say they're so excited about what's happening, what they're seeing, yeah. Believe in the campaign. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, I really liked what you had to say in your commercials, and that's a really nice thing to hear. And I've heard a few people come with very specific policy objectives or agendas and things they want to talk about, and I appreciate that. That's why I said I think it's yeah. important to be out in the community. And I would like to just put in a plug that I do want to hear from people, and we have a great district office here, and I've got a full-time staff that's working here to hear from constituents, to work with them, to address all kinds of needs, and I hope that people who are listening and people who look in the future will be sure to get in touch with me because I want to hear from people. So I love people coming up to me on the street, as it were, and talking about what's on their mind.
Well, you're part of a massively large freshman class, 41 new Democrats, and we're 40 new Democrats, maybe 41, we'll see, but just one of the largest freshman classes as a whole. Do you guys feel like you have a collective voice as sort of a group? There's just a lot of people. How do you see kind of like almost a 10-12% change in Congress? Have you guys gotten together sort of on a bipartisan basis? I know obviously you do on a partisan basis, but to sort of bring in kind of new ideas, and how do you see your role as freshmen? Because oftentimes it's sort of you're supposed to be seen, not heard. You guys are already starting to change some of that.
Yeah, I definitely think this is not a class that's going to be seen and not heard. And we have had a chance to get together. We certainly caucus together on a partisan basis, but we have also had a chance to go for a couple of different opportunities outside of Washington. And I went with a bunch of my classmates to Williamsburg, Virginia, with the Congressional Research Service from the Library of Congress. And that was a bipartisan weekend where we really delved into a little bit of orientation into the processes and procedures, and a lot into the substance. So we had breakout sessions on all kinds of issues, you know, immigration and transportation and energy, and got everybody in the room. And one thing I would say about this class is it is a diverse class in so many ways, including diversity of experience. And I think it's so important because there are real people with experience in the business world. You know, there are a few other lawyers like me. There are people with national security backgrounds and military service. And it's really great. I mean, my freshman class, for example, includes Donna Shalala, the former Secretary of Health and
right.
Human Services.
Who's nothing like a freshman, right?
Nothing. No. Well, and what I love, I've heard her say, and I love it, she says, you know, I'm a freshman, but I'm not a rookie.
That's
and great. And there are a lot of people like that who yeah. really are bringing something, some kind of experience and a voice that we need to hear in Congress. And I think that the people who were already there are very receptive to hearing from us. I mean, one of the things that I was able to do as a freshman, I'm the chair of a subcommittee. I'm on the Science, Space, and Technology Committee, and I'm the subcommittee chair on the environment. And that's pretty unusual, yeah. but I think that, you know, we aren't being asked to be seen and not heard.
Well, I just want to follow up on that. So, and let's talk a little bit about this, sort of the idea of sort of style versus substance. I mean, stylistically, some of your colleagues have already sort of decided to take, I think, a different route in terms of, I'll name him because he's not here, Congressman Dan Crenshaw. We were talking about this other day. He's traveling around. He's doing a lot of things. He's a Republican member from the Northeast portion, kind of your other freshman twin. You really, I think, focused on hitting the ground running substantively for the district, lots related to Harvey aid. Obviously, you said you chair the subcommittee on science technology. They're already talking about NASA spending cuts. You've taken a much more CD7-focused approach versus some of your other colleagues. Is there a message in that you're sending as far as focusing just in the district first before looking more?
Well, I think that the job is in many ways what you make of it. And what I see it to be is the voice of this district. And the only way I can be the voice of this district is by being in the district, being present, being a part of it, being a part of the community. And I think that our district, Congressional District 7, has a really important voice to be heard on a lot of issues of national importance. Right now, we are hearing a lot of conversation about our energy future, and our energy future is very much driven by what happens in this community. And I think we need to be driving that conversation, and we need to talk about the fact that here, you know, we are the energy capital of the world. We care just as much about the environment. We care about the future for our children and grandchildren, and it's really important that we're there. So what I see my job as doing is being the voice of this community and really making that voice heard. So that's been my approach, and it really is this incredible privilege. Once you get up there and you see what it's like, I have people coming to talk to me on all kinds of different issues every day, and I'm in a position to be helpful. And I think that that's why I'm there. And so that's the path that I'm following. And I think it's the right one for me and for the district.
A lot of the, you know, first-term members, especially in the Democratic Party, are kind of pushing the party more to the left. That's sort of true for the Republicans, too, although that occurred, you know, years before. Do you find yourself as a kind of moderate, sort of centrist in the party, having to kind of push back against some of that gravitation towards a more progressive thinking? Or do you feel like there's enough room for kind of everybody under the tent?
I feel like there's a lot of room for everybody under the tent. And I think that some folks and some ideas are out there and are important, that we're hearing them and that we're thinking and we're challenging our way of thinking. But I think there are a whole lot of people like me there. And in fact, if you look at most of the members of this new freshman class who changed the balance in the House, the ones who turned districts from red to blue, they're people from districts a lot like this one and people a lot like me who are kind of in the middle, interested in solving problems and in building consensus and in coming up with real solutions. And I'm actually a member of the New Democrat Coalition, which is one of the caucuses within the Democratic Caucus. It's the largest of the groups within the Democratic Caucus. We have 101 members, and it's very much a pro-business, pro-trade, pro-growth, but socially more progressive caucus. And I think that that's really consistent with the 7th Congressional District and our community. We want responsible governance, but we also want to make sure that we are protecting the rights of everyone in the country and focused on both of those kinds of things. And so that's a really big caucus, and there's a lot of room for us. And we're doing a lot to advance substantive policy positions. I mean, today, to Jay's question earlier, I'm working on a task force on trade, task force on healthcare, task force on energy. We have a lot of people who are really policy people putting their heads together and trying to think of what is a way that will work going forward. Because it's one thing to put ideas out in the world. It's another thing to develop legislation that's actually going to move that issue forward.
Yeah, driving around Houston, we are constantly in traffic. And your predecessor was famous for his, shall we say, intransigent views as it relates to mass transit. Metro is going to be on the ballot. They want more money. They want help from you and the folks in the federal government. Where are we on potentially actually having mass transit in Houston?
Well, you know, we have some, and the hope is that we'll have more. And I think, you know, one of the things I like about this Metro Next program is that right now they're in the process of getting a lot of community input. I think that that's important, and I think it's a little bit of where there was maybe a breakdown that led to my predecessor's stance. I think it is really important that everybody have a voice. But what I heard for the 18 months I was trying to get this job, the longest job interview of my life, was people are frustrated about transit options and they want different options. And I've known people for years who take the park and ride into downtown, folks who love the options, and we need more of them. And I think it's really important if we want to continue to attract people to this community that you don't just have to buy a car, but if you want to buy a car, you're going to have good roads to drive on and you're going to be able to get from point A to point B in less traffic. But what I hear is a real demand and desire for alternatives. And I think it's important that Metro is working on a community-wide and region-wide set of solutions.
This is a big issue, obviously, because it affects all Houstonians. Beyond transportation, what are the big issues you think face CD7 and Houston more broadly? We're expanding, exploding in terms of population. You've got, you know, multiple different big industries here. What are the things that you think that are going to be the kind of biggest challenges in the next 2 years and even maybe the next decade beyond that?
Well, there are a couple of things, and I think you're right. We're continuing to expand. I was just looking at some statistics that say our region is scheduled or estimated to grow to about 10 million people by 2040.
Yeah.
We're around 6 million now, so that's a lot of growth. That's a lot more people. And I do think transit is really important. But I think, you know, one of the existential issues that we're dealing with and talking about right now is what does our future look like? What is our energy future look like? Mm-hmm. And as I said, I think that we have so many smart people here who are thinking about this, who are addressing the challenges of climate change and what that means to all of us. We saw it in Hurricane Harvey, and so we have the immediate rebuilding our infrastructure, coming up with a more resilient infrastructure, coming up with ways that we're going to manage living with increased rain, increased frequency and duration and intensity of these storms coming. That's a huge issue for us to tackle. And then there's also the question of what does our energy future look like overall? These are our jobs and this is what we do. And I think that we need to be the leaders there and saying, here are all the creative things we're doing. You know, Texans believe in all of the above energy approach. And I think we need to look realistically at how are we managing this and what are the choices we're making. And so much of the innovation, so much of the new technology relating to energy is being developed in this district. Yeah. And I think that, you know, we want to continue to be the leaders and we want to continue to be the energy capital of the world as we go forward.
You talked about the 18-month job interview, the longest you've ever had in your career. Well, guess what? We're about less than a year away from the March 2020 primary here in Texas. One Texan for sure running for president, maybe a second one. You're going to be up for re-election in what is sort of the marquee swing district in the state. No offense to our friends in Dallas.
Well, I-45 rivalry always exists.
Always is, and it always will. It always will. But do you have an eye towards a presidential election? We talked. Brandon alluded to this sort of the progressive versus more centrist, moderate wings of the party. Also, I mean, you yourself. I mean, you're going to have to run for re-election in a state that has not always fared well for Democrats in presidential cycles. Do you have a preference on who do you like to see be president of the United States?
Yeah, we'll get you in trouble in addition to that. Should Beto O'Rourke run for president or should he stick around here and run for Senate?
Okay, so
well, he's already said no to Senate.
Yep.
He's already said no to Senate.
Changes mind.
So I don't have a candidate in the presidential race, but I think there are a lot of great candidates and there are a lot of good people. And I think that so far the people I've seen would be an improvement in the White House. So I think there are a lot of good people out there, but I haven't picked a candidate. I am focused right now on doing my job and doing a good job, and I think that that's the most important thing I can do in terms of being reelected, because this job isn't an entitlement. It's an incredible, incredible privilege, and I understand why other people want this job. It's a great job. So my goal is to do a good job and convince people in the 7th Congressional District that I'm the person that can best represent them, and that's what I've set about to do now, choosing areas of substance on my committees. I'm working on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and I'm working on the subcommittees that deal with, I oversee the Army Corps of Engineers and FEMA, and also railroads and pipelines, all critical areas in our district and in our region. And then I'm on, as I mentioned, the Science, Space, and Technology Committee, and there I'm on the Energy Subcommittee and the chair of the Subcommittee on the Environment. And so really focusing on the issues that matter and that drive our region is my approach. And then making sure that I'm here and I'm present and I'm able to hear from people. That is what I was sent to do. And that's my focus.
I think a lot of people are frustrated by politics because they think that it's all what you see on the news, which is people fighting, or in TV ads where there's so much friction. Is it really like that? Or is it more kind of more consensual, like you find people who can work with you even across the aisle? Is it this contentious with the White House as much as it seems? Like, how do you judge and how can you convey the kind of feeling that you have when it comes to kind of working with people on a daily basis through what is a very partisan kind of Washington?
And let me add one more thing. Do you have a Republican best friend?
Right.
Well, I don't know that I would describe anybody as my best friend. Now, although I will give that some thought, but I have a lot of friends and I have a lot of people I'm friendly with. You know, like I said, I fly back and forth every week and I'm often on the flight with Representative Brady and Representative Olson, often with Representative Jackson Lee. I mean, she is, you know, so hardworking and she's back and forth from Houston all the time. I was on the plane with Senator Cornyn this week. Wow. So, you know, there are a lot of opportunities to interact with other people of both parties. And I do think it's important. And I think a lot of that is not what makes the news.
Right.
You know, there's drama on the news. There's conflict on the news. And of course, there are a lot of things where there's disagreement and really important issues that we need to be focused on. But in your daily life, there's a lot of working together. There's a lot of agreement on issues. You know, one of the very first thing that I worked on when I got there was putting together a letter with Representative Olson, a bipartisan letter that our regional delegation signed on to. And it was so good that both of our senators and the governor wanted to sign on to it, too, encouraging the administration to get the HUD rules finished mm-hmm. so that we can get our Harvey money. And that is a priority. We also worked together on a bipartisan basis on a letter to the president that, again, the governor and both senators signed off on and many members of our delegation on both sides of the aisle, saying not to use the Harvey recovery funds mm-hmm. for a border wall.
Right.
And so there are times where we are talking, where we're working together, and there are all sorts of things where we work together too, like naming post offices and you know, all kinds of stuff where it's really quite friendly.
I'll throw my name in the mix on that if you want. Like if you're looking for names, like well, or maybe J.I. Is a good name for it.
Well, no, I mean, you're sitting in the House, the seat that George H.W. Bush, so I assume there's going to be a potential new post office naming there just for him. No, not in the future.
Well, maybe. That has not come up yet. Of course, we do have the airport here, which right. gets a lot of attention. But
you're a
but
hobby
there are
flyer.
All kinds
that's
of
why.
Them.
That's what it is.
Well, there are all kinds of ways that you can work together on things that matter to your constituents that don't make national news and don't make headlines, but are really important to the quality of life for the people that you represent. And so, I'm glad to have spent a lot of time trying to build those relationships, and expect to continue to do that.
So if you weren't a lawyer or you weren't a member of Congress, what would you have done career-wise?
Oh, my gosh. There's so much that I would like to do. In fact, you know, I sit down at a dinner party or something else and hear about what somebody does. I think, oh, that sounds fascinating. And, you know, that's part of why it was great being a lawyer, because I got to learn about people's businesses intensely and their jobs and their lives and whatever it is that they did. And now being in Congress, it's the same kind of thing. I mean, you asked about kind of what's a typical day. On any given day, I will get up in the morning. I will go to some kind of breakfast or some kind of meeting. And then I will go to my office and start meeting with constituents. Go vote at some point during the day, go back to the office, meet with more people, and I will talk to people about medical issues, about legislation that they care about immigration issues. People will come in to talk about healthcare throughout the day, and it's just a tiny little window into what people do. And so I think there's so many things that I could do that would make me happy, but this job is a pretty great one. I'm not looking for another one.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about sort of your personal preferences so people can get to know you a little bit, right? So, Jay
this
and I,
is the
obviously,
hard part, right?
This is the really hard part, because you're going to have to make some very tough choices.
Okay.
Starting with the first one. Jay and I, of course, represent different schools. Jay went to the University of Texas, and I teach at the University of Houston. So, we have a little rivalry going on things, as I'm sure you can appreciate. So, we've got a basketball tournament coming up, the NCAA tournament. I think both are going to make it. I know UH is going to make
it.
Oh,
why? We know UH is going to make it.
UT, I don't know, but if they both made it, what would your judgment be about which team would go farther in the tournament? Do you have a sense? Are you a basketball fan or?
Well, I am a basketball fan, and I grew up a serious Rockets fan. In fact, when I was a kid, this goes to your question, I wanted to grow up and be Hannah Storm.
Did you really?
I did, okay. And that's when Hannah Storm was the local
yes.
Before
she became huge
run.
Hannah Storm.
Before she
Storm.
Became Hannah yeah. Storm, she was wow. Hannah Storm here. And I grew up in the Feisley Majama era, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, those were the days, and so I'm very optimistic to see U of H get back okay. to the glory days of the Feisley Majama era.
Awesome.
So that's kind of where my heart is, although I love Texas too, but that's where
okay.
my heart is.
They're okay.
Right. Well, we were talking about this earlier, but the rodeo is going on right now, and we all have our favorite rodeo memory, kind of first concert we went to, favorite food at the carnival kind of stuff. What about you? What was the first rodeo concert? What was your favorite rodeo memory, and what's your favorite carnival food?
Yeah.
So the first concert I remember seeing at the rodeo was the Oak Ridge Boys. I have seen many since that time. We had season tickets when I was in high school, and I was
wow.
there almost every single night.
There are
so
a bunch
I've seen
of concerts,
a ton of bands
too. It's like tens
amazing.
And dozens of them.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of people who were in town this weekend from out of town that I was chatting with about it. And I said, well, you know, Cardi B was last night. And
right.
I mean, people are amazed at how cool the rodeo is and how much is going on. So I have a million great memories of being there, of seeing things. And I love going to the carnival. I think probably my favorite food has got to be the funnel cakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's mine too. We had the deep fried Twinkie versus deep fried Oreo conversation in our house. I don't know anybody that really likes deep fried Oreo.
Yeah, okay.
Although apparently somebody does.
People do. It's a staple, right? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think you can go wrong deep frying anything.
That's okay. True. You can deep fry a shoe probably.
Yeah.
And get away with it.
That'll be next year's winner, I think, right? Yeah, close to it. Well, so obviously we are in the epicenter of Tex-Mex. So one obvious question is, do you prefer flour tortillas or corn tortillas with your taco?
So I'm a flour tortilla person.
Okay.
And I really like them at the original Ninfa's on Navigation. Okay. Those are the best tortillas.
Oh, that's good to know.
That's good. Okay. Not in CD7, unfortunately.
Yeah. Not in CD7, but you can go to Armando's and get a pretty good flour tortilla as
that's
well.
Good. Good
and
point.
That is in CD7.
I was going to say, you know, you have the good fortune of probably being in at least, if not in people, like the most culinarily diverse district, maybe in the country.
That's
right, you're going from Chinese New Year celebrations to some of the best, you know, Central American food, Indian food,
Vietnamese food,
everything in CD7. I don't think people.
Oh yeah, I'm in foodie heaven. In fact, did you see the article in the New York Times that had the three great places to eat in
CD7?
They
were almost all in CD7.
All in CD7.
Right?
Yeah. You know, I wondered about that. Do your colleagues, are they surprised at all? Because, you know, they see the big change. There's been national stories about sort of the huge demographic change in Houston. CD7 sort of being the example of that, kind of you representing that new diversity. Do your colleagues go, wow, I had no idea that West Houston, Southwest Houston has changed so much?
Yeah, I think there's always some of that. I mean, I remember being a high school student. I actually went on one of these programs to Washington, D.C. and stayed with students from other states and did this close-up Washington program. It was really cool. I encourage Houston students to do that. And, you know, getting those questions like, is there tumbleweed in the streets and all that kind of stuff. It's just like, I love telling people that it's the most diverse city in the country. Yeah. And people are surprised to hear that. Mm. But I think, you know, it's such an interesting, culturally rich, diverse place. And I love being able to share that story and tell people what a cool place I come from.
Yeah. Where do you eat in D.C.? Now, you're obviously close by to a couple of restaurants, but it's limited. So what's your kind of go-to lunch? And then where would you go after hours, say, with a colleague to have a drink or to have dinner or something?
So one of the challenges, I think, of being in Congress is that there's food at everything. So you have to not eat too much.
Okay.
But I'll get up and go to a caucus meeting or a whip meeting in the mornings, and there's always breakfast.
Oh, that's nice. Okay.
So I don't really have a lot of experience sampling many of the places nearby. There's kind of a quick grab a sandwich place nearby where I'll go or I will get lunch.
Mm.
And there is a taco place that is not Houston, but is not terrible.
Now this gets into dangerous territory.
Yeah. Like I said, not Houston, but not terrible.
I thought there was an unwritten rule. You never eat it. You never eat Tex-Mex north of Dallas.
Yeah, that's.
And even in Dallas
totally
is a little.
I can't go 4 days without Tex-Mex. I mean, if I had my choice, I would have Tex-Mex breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
That's a good question. So what's your go-to meal kind of right when you get off the plane? Like, is it like Whataburger? Do you go for Tex-Mex? Do you want pho? Like, what's your go-to meal?
So I actually have established this routine, which is I always get a burrito from the Papacitos in the airport for the plane flight up.
Okay.
And as soon as I get back, we have a standing premarital agreement in my marriage that we have Mexican food every Friday night.
Oh, good.
So if I'm coming home
that's
on Fridays, there's no question. It was a way of limiting the amount of Mexican food we had. It was actually very smart on my husband's part, but we have Mexican every Friday night. So if I'm flying home on Friday, it is straight to one of the great places in CD7. And if not, it kind of depends. It's also nice to get to come home and just cook and relax. But Mexican food's always top of the list.
That's the one. It shows what a good negotiator you are, too. So it certainly contributes to that, right?
It has worked out fairly well for me on the Mexican
food. That's right. Friday night, Tex-Mex and, you know, border security.
That's
kind
right.
Kind of works that way. There you go. Well, Congresswoman, it has been an awesome time for us. We've really enjoyed getting a chance to get to know you and just having this conversation, getting a little bit more. For our listeners get a chance to kind of peer inside your head a little bit as well.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I love being here. Happy to come back when we have more going on and give you guys an update. But I love listening to you, and I've loved spending this time with you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Well, that's it for this week. Party Politics is recorded in the George B. Geary Performance Studio at Houston Public Media.
A big thanks to our producers, Sophie Mall and Ernie Manous. Special kudos to our web and graphics team at Houston Public Media. And finally, thanks, as always, to our audio engineer, Todd Big Audio Holslander.
I'm Jay Iyer.
And I'm Brandon Rottinghouse. We'll see you next week.